You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Thanks so much for joining me again. We are, obviously, you're going to notice a theme in the next couple of weeks. We'll try and change it up so that it doesn't get too redundant. But I've been having a really great time speaking with former Metroland staffers. I'm trying to do my best to capture the essence of the old paper. The good essence, anyway. I'm definitely hearing some very interesting stories from the past, and I want to make sure that we are bringing back the best parts of it and leaving the worst parts of it behind. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring this back or start any type of media like this was there's not a lot of arts and entertainment publications that are run by women in the area. They have women staffers. They have women working with them, obviously, but run by them, run by good people. And I'm not saying that I'm the best person in the world, but I'm better than some. I'm trying, obviously, very hard to be like diplomatic and dance around exactly what I want to say, but those in the know exactly what I mean. And we need a safe place for other creatives to come. And some of the things that we had here were no longer an option for me and for others. And so I'm hoping that this will be an option for those people who felt like they couldn't go to some of the other quote unquote options that we have here. I am not disparaging a lot of the places that have been amazing to me over the years. Like, there have been a lot of publications that I'm still happy to work with, that I'm still going to work with, that have just shown me so much love. The Gazette and the Times Union have been amazing to me since I started. And I am not looking to compete with anybody. I'm just looking to add to the conversation. And so with that, it's important for me to connect with as many former staffers as possible and find out a little bit more about how I can make this amazing, because I make no qualms about admitting that I really have no idea what I'm doing to an extent, but I'm excited to find out and I'm excited to learn what I can and make this awesome. I've been flipping through some old Metrolands once I got the mold off of them, the dust off of them. I pulled them out and immediately started sneezing. We're talking like, 15, 20 years old. But it was really interesting to go through and look at them and see, things that were of interest to people back then and trying to adapt it to today and making it something that people really want to pick up. I had no intention of doing a print at first. And then I started to talk to people and then thought about doing a quarterly, and then I started to talk to more people and saw the need for possibly a monthly. So that's what we're going to try soon. We want to hear from folks and see what they missed most about it, where they liked picking it up, because the more I talked to people and told them what I was doing, the more they said, I miss picking one up. And I really paid attention to that. They weren't just saying I missed it. They were saying I missed picking it up. And it's nice to maybe revert back to the days where we could get our news or our entertainment news, as it were, without the distractions of, text coming through or social media apps on your phone. I can't tell you how many times I just go to message somebody and while I'm switching screens, I get distracted in a matter of seconds. And so for some people, it'll be really nice to pick up something tangible that they can sit and have a cup of coffee and flip through and hold on to as a guide for the whole month of what to do and where to go and how to support arts and entertainment. And so that's my goal. Maybe I'm naive, but we're going to find out and we're going to do it and we're going to see what happens. So I hope that you'll join me on this journey. I'm excited, and I hope you are too. Today's guest is John Rodat, who worked for the paper back in the day, and we had a really fun conversation about his experience there, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it. And here it goes. This is John Rodat, and this is The Mistress of None, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, 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 and welcome to The Mistress of None here at the beautiful Blake Annex Studios in downtown Albany. My guest today is John Rodat. John, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Erin. Thank you for having me here. I'm excited to have this conversation. It's about a topic that I feel strongly and passionately about. It's about two topics, Metroland and me.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, we're off to a great start then. No, thank you very much for finding the time to come and sit with me. I reached out to you a while ago when I was thinking about doing all of these things. I wanted to definitely talk to everybody as much as I could who had previously worked with Metroland, and just I want to obviously capture the essence of it, the positive essence of it, in the best way I can. And I think it's so important to stay connected to people in the past. And I mean, like, we know each other tangentially through the scene. It's a small community, so, you know, we already, like, we all know of one another.
Yeah, certainly there's, but we all have awareness of one another, yeah, even if we haven't been in one another's immediate orbits.
Exactly. But it's funny because you'll see somebody and you feel like, oh yeah, like, how's your daughter? She just right. went to school, you know. So tell me about your history with Metroland.
Well, I sort of stumbled into it, despite having been a writer to some extent, or at least an aspiring writer, prior to getting hooked up with Metroland. My published history in the immediate area was with a competitor. There were some other papers, as old people will remember.
Older
people, legacy humans might remember. And I was not employed by a competitor, but a friend of mine freelanced for them, I believe, and he was in a band, and so that paper would not cover him. He couldn't cover himself, essentially.
Sure.
So he asked me if I would cover his band for that paper. And I said, yeah, sure. Thinking, well, there's no way I'm going to write a bad review of my good friend.
Of course.
And this is like a crazy form of nepotism, but it got me a byline. And then I continued to write for them. That magazine was called The Source, a sort of short-lived competitor, though at times pretty good. And then at some point, and I forget the exact details, but I think, speaking of being brought into one another's orbit, I think I was brought into the orbit of the Metroland people. I became friendly with them, seeing them at shows, et cetera. And then I got an invitation to go write for them.
And what year was this?
That probably would have been in the middle 90s-ish.
Okay. Quick side note, though, just for clarification, I can't write about my own band?
I think that rule is flexible.
Okay.
I think
it better be.
Yeah. And I think... And I believe you actually have the title of mistress, so that implies some authority. I think you can do whatever the hell you want.
That's all I needed to know. This has been Mistress of None. No, I'm just kidding. So mid-90s you came
sometime
on.
Sometime in there, yeah.
Was that right around the time that Steve took over? Or
no, that was, I believe the timeline was much earlier. I think he became editor, well, he was editor in the 80s, and I forget when he became publisher as well.
Okay. I thought that Peter had said that he left in 95 or something like that. That's why I was trying to put that together.
I believe Peter left earlier. I never worked directly with Peter Islin, the founder of the paper. I believe that Steve was editor under Peter, mm-hmm. and that at some point, for various financial reasons, the paper was up for grabs, and Steve, with some investors, bought the paper. So he became the publisher as well as the editor-in-chief.
Gotcha.
So when I began, Steve was my editor. Steve was my boss. He was the publisher.
Gotcha. Now, what was your writing primarily focused on?
I came in as a music writer, mm-hmm. And remained so for a while. But if I remember correctly, early on when I started to speak with Steve about the possibility of coming on full time, he asked if I were capable and interested in writing about other things. And I said, I can write about anything for money.
So,
sure, you name it.
I love that. I wasn't expecting the last two words. I mean, I should have expected the last two words, but thank you. That was wonderful.
But as it happened, my interests were compatible with what he was looking for at that time and were compatible with Metroland generally, which at that time when I came on was pretty much, not exclusively, but I think it was predominantly an arts and culture focused magazine. Mm-hmm. There was some political writing, I think, but the personality of the paper, which you referenced that you wanted to get at, I think is really interesting because even in my time there, as a freelancer, then as a full-time person, and then again as a freelancer again, it changed. Every time there was an addition to the staff, every time there was a subtraction from the staff, it shifted subtly in some cases or really significantly in other cases. Mm-hmm. I think if you took a paper from 1993, from 2002, they seem like dramatically different papers.
Yeah.
Never mind how it existed in the very early days. If you look at those papers from the 80s, when Peter was at the helm, it had a fundamentally different character and presentation. In part, that's because Metroland, I think, always strived to be a reflection of the culture. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, changes. So at one point, it's essentially a disco and cocaine magazine. And then much later, it's pick the era.
Yeah. And Peter did admit that it was all about disco when he first started, and that he essentially used it to pick up chicks.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know,
they had I believe it was a Fox of the Month.
Paul Rapp was telling me about the Fox of the Month. He toyed with the notion of bringing that back, and I believe he self-vetoed himself.
I think it's a great idea. I think it just has to be an actual fox.
I believe that was addressed.
Okay.
But let's not give it all away.
A different fox every month.
We have to keep some of this brainstorming under wraps so it could be a great reveal. So if you know of a fox, an actual fox.
Humanely captured or borrowed this has to be entirely consensual, mm-hmm. because this is a different era.
Yes. We can't just take pictures of foxes.
No, do not steal any foxes. Do not kidnap a fox.
I pluralized foxes, and that was wrong, wasn't it?
Foxen, I think it is.
Foxen? And we'll look it up later anyway. So how long were you with Metroland?
I think I started, as I said, in the mid-90s. I came on board full-time as an editor, I think, in 2000. Can that be right? I think that's right. And then I was there for 5 years as full-time staff, I think, leaving as a senior associate editor, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And then I continued to freelance with them until the paper closed.
Okay.
So more than a decade.
Wow.
So a while.
Yeah. I mean, they closed in 2015. So
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, so quite a bit more than a decade,
right.
In fact.
Wow. Yeah. Impressive.
or codependent.
Or codependent.
Yeah.
It's all relative. It's all about, you know, how you look at things. And so I was telling somebody today about my hopes and dreams for this project and, you know, how I am trying to, you know, naively unite the community and get people to work together a little bit instead of competing with one another. And I said, most days I feel very optimistic and other days I feel completely naive. But either way, you know, it's never stopped me before from trying to do this because it is such a small market in this mm-hmm. area that we're only hurting ourselves by trying to compete with each other in these different areas.
Well, and I think there is, if I can philosophize on the subject for a moment,
please.
I think there is an ideal balance for an enterprise of this sort of naivete and hopefulness and optimism. You wouldn't try to do it if you didn't expect there could be some positive, some net gain for the community. I think it needs to have an equal share or a roughly equal share of cynicism. I think that helps propel quality. I think which is not to say that...
You're such an enabler. Yeah. Honestly, I love this.
Well, and that's something that, for your sake, I hope we see happen as you and your crew go through this, finding that right tone, finding what's right for the people who are involved at that moment, finding out what's right for the sort of cultural moment in this area. And again, I think if you went back through Metrolands, you would find times where the publication seemed to have this personality. And it might have been disco and cocaine makes you feel different than, you know, austerity politics and conversations about racial division.
Very true.
So,
I mean, mildly different.
Right. And even thinking back on my own contributions to the paper and the tone that they had, which is in part just a question of skill and experience, getting better than I was when I started. For me, particularly writing about arts and such, I found a time when I thought my cynicism or snarkiness, it wasn't working as well for me at that time. And I thought, therefore, it wouldn't work as well for the community.
Mm-hmm. Some astounding self-awareness.
Well, and that's not to say that I thought no one should be cynical.
Sure.
And I've had conversations with writers at various times. In fact, the guy that I mentioned who first asked me to write about his band is my very good friend Opie Callahan, Olin Callahan, at that time of the Decadent Royals. And we talked about how we pursued writing about local bands, particularly people whom you are going to run into after you have written about them. Mm-hmm. And I think early on, he had the feeling, as a musician himself, I imagine, that if he couldn't write something helpful, then he probably wasn't going to. Which isn't to say that he would write a positive review of a bad experience, but he tried to find a way to make it useful to the community, to the community of musicians particularly. Of course, rising tide carrying all boats and so forth. It would be ridiculous for a musician to trash the local music scene.
Yeah.
That seems dumb. At that time, I don't know that I agreed with him entirely. I certainly didn't set out to destroy anything. Mm-hmm. But there were times when I saw work, musical work or theatrical work or whatever, and I thought, this needs to be better.
Yeah.
How is this going to be better if no one tells them?
Sure.
But that's a fine and occasionally really shitty line to walk.
I think maybe I'm in a good position then where because you can usually tell too if somebody wants to be better or if somebody's quite content with how they are. Mm. And I've definitely told myself that because one of the main impetus of wanting to start this was the struggles that I've seen with getting people to come back out. And so I try to impart to the team that if you go to a show and you have a terrible time, just skip that one.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to talk about, like, you know, how the sound wasn't great at SPAC or how, you know, like maybe something that was just very personal to your experience that wouldn't be the same for somebody else. And maybe just skip that one. I don't want to lie to people. I don't want to make fluff. But I also, we don't need to add to the apathy of, like, you know, keeping people at home. But also, if I'm out reviewing, you know, obviously, if it's a touring band, like, you know, what I say is not going to hurt their feelings.
Right.
But when it comes to locals and stuff, I have a fairly good relationship with people and I have a fairly good reputation where I could be like, hey, maybe, you know, try this. Like, my review might not help them, but like a conversation with them might not help, might be a little more helpful if they do actually want to get better in whatever it is they're doing.
Sure. Maybe. Well, and I think, again, this is going to be a bit repetitive, but I think it's really important. The cultural moment is really relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were joking, I don't know if this was on camera before we started recording, but
I'll never tell.
The ages that we may or may not be, which is very, very young and vibrant, is that was a different time. And the cultural conversation was conducted via different and more centralized media.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a strong argument could be made that troll-like behavior from what we hope will be an, again, somewhat centralized publication, it's unnecessary.
If people really want
to find really mean-spirited comments about the band that played last night, they can find them very easily. They can publish those comments themselves if
they
want to say mean things, and they absolutely will. And there's a, I don't know if this counts as an anecdote, but toward the tail end of one of the eras of Metroland, when the internet had become pretty well adopted, but not so universally and not woven into every aspect of our life. The internet was still a place then that you could go to if you felt like it. And Metroland itself wasn't making much use of it, but some clever younger people were, and there was an anonymous bulletin board online that was, it somehow started central to the band Beef and later Wasted, both fronted by Stephen Gaylord, who I think may not have had anything to do with this site at all. I really don't know. It was truly anonymous. And it was mean as fuck. It was, but very self-consciously so. And yeah. Everyone who participated, myself included, I know some of the people who were involved. I know it was like a roast. It was the earliest I knew of troll culture, but it was explicitly so. That was its purpose. Mm-hmm. So you could go on, as I did first, and find the meanest things said about you. Ooh. Written by clever, knowledgeable insiders. And there were circumstances, I know this to be true, where we would be sitting in the Metroland editorial bullpen. We didn't have separate offices. And there was a good chance that someone across the room with their computer to you was writing mean things about you that you were watching coming up in real time. Couldn't prove it.
Oh.
And there was
like, turn it into this like Hunger Games kind of scenario.
It was fierce. But it was such an anomaly at that point.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of commentary in Metroland itself, when it was a little mean, when it was a little satirical, when it was critical, I think that served a purpose. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that it does now.
I don't either, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'm making a very conscious effort to keep this entire project, and it's not just going to be the paper. Like, I have ideas. I have great community ideas. I think they're great anyway. But, I mean, I've been meeting with a lot of different people and seeing how we can all work together, and I want it to be a positive message. And unlike the one thing that I'm not going to recapture from the original Metroland is I'm going to keep this apolitical, because in, you know, 2024, we've, you know, I don't want to say put your head in the sand, but we've had enough. You can go anywhere else and get, you know, politics and get
right.
And maybe this will be a brief respite from that. You read about a show that's coming up, you read about, you know, like read one of these interviews or read about a show that you may have missed and make it your beeswax to not miss it the next time that artist comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, I believe in that. And I'm very cynical. So it's like I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I've been to more shows in the past month than I've been in the past 15 years. I mean, to be fair, I didn't really have that kind of time. But as I started to dwindle back my own calendar, my own performances, there were nights where somebody's like, okay, this is happening here. And I'd be like, and I'm like, no, Aaron, this is your job now. Go to that show.
Right.
And I'm doing it. And so there's going to be some snark. Don't get me wrong. You know, sure. I can't turn that off. But it's, I want it to be a very positive message overall.
Well, and I think that's a part of that culture as well. We all know, and this is not just musicians, but these are non-musicians who participate in the scene. I have never been part of a scene, however positive it has been, where there's not someone against the wall leaning to their friend talking shit about, I've got to repeat, talking shit about either the band or the bartender or the person standing beside them. That's a real part of the experience, yeah, of going to a show. You could be at the most positive show. You could be at like a Flying Zucchini Brothers show. You could be up with people.
Oh, I would find a lot to say about that.
Right. And or it could just be an absolute love fest, jam band, like an ecstasy-fueled hug-a-thon, a cuddle party, whatever. Somebody is annoying the shit out of you there. and you're going to say something.
Yeah.
So I think it would be untrue. It would not be representative. It wouldn't convey to people why it is fun to be part of that. Because it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
It's live music, live art is phenomenal because it's so varied. And though now in part it's so expensive, which is, this is just sort of an auxiliary thought. There was a time when you could spend $7 or $15, whatever it was, depending on the venue, and go see a show. It wasn't terrible, even if it was terrible.
Yeah.
It's $7 and you come back and say, and respond to how was that show? You say, it was fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know what I just saw. I saw $7 of what the fuck? And that's great. That's great. You kind of hope for that. Maybe not as the majority of your experience. But when a show is $150, when a show is $250.
Your expectations are much higher.
And then is it fair of a consumer to expect a certain degree of quality? Arguably, it is.
Sure.
And I don't know if, I imagine Taylor Swift gives very consistent performances.
I've heard.
And that's great. And for the money that is being spent, that's fair.
Yeah.
On the other hand, wouldn't you love to see Taylor Swift come out absolutely hammered and just like abuse the audience or tell everybody whom she hates or just like one blowout evening? That would almost be worth $250, I think.
It's like you've read my dream journal. But then again, you and I are built a little bit differently than your, you know, Taylor Swift fans.
And my daughter is a huge Taylor Swift fan.
And she probably wouldn't like that as much.
I don't think she would. And yeah. I would feel so badly for her.
But you would be laughing hysterically.
I would watch the video over and over again. But, you know, then I might call Ticketmaster or whomever and say, you owe my daughter $250.
Very fair. But I mean, I think to that end, I am also going to try and we're going to have a whole DIY section of like, you know, some of these underground shows and really try and highlight some of, there's so many amazing free shows.
Oh yeah.
In the area. And so I've even talked to some people about like partnering with, you know, maybe even like CDTA to basically all of your excuses list for why you're not going to the show.
That's a great idea.
Let's answer that. Oh, you don't have a ride? I got you. You don't want to park? I got you. You don't want to this. And then, you know, at the end of the list, you're going to see that some people just never wanted to go in the first place.
Right.
But some people, I'm going to make them put their money where their mouth is.
Well, and to some extent, that's always been an issue with the sort of tri-city disbursement of arts and entertainment. There's so much going on in Troy now.
Yeah.
A lot of really great forward-looking music. I mean, there's much more going on than I am aware of, for sure. So I couldn't give an encyclopedic account of this. But to the extent that I hear anything, which is minimal, even I know that there's stuff going on in Albany. There's stuff going on in Troy. There are different types of things going on in Schenectady and certainly Saratoga. So that has always been a bit of an obstacle. And particularly, again, different era, now that we're hoping more people all people are driving sober. And,
of course, and that's obviously like, something that's near and dear to my heart, you know, so I understand that completely, but there are ways around it, and we can figure this out.
Yeah, marijuana's legal.
Yeah.
We need a shuttle service.
Yeah, well, that's on my list. That's
okay,
one of the things.
Good.
Because, again, like, people do have all these excuses, like, and, I mean, when you think about it, maybe it doesn't seem that far for me because I spend my entire week driving all over the place. I mean, I was in Syracuse last night, you know, like, and I'll drive to these places and people are like, oh, you're going back tonight? And I'm like, yeah, why? Like, so it doesn't faze me to drive to Troy or Saratoga or Schenectady. But like, I remember in 2002, when I moved from Albany to Troy, you would have thought I moved to Guam.
Oh yeah.
The way people were like, I'm not coming over there. And I'm like,
it's bizarre. I lived in Troy for about 10 years, and I loved it. It was before, it certainly wasn't what it is now, but it had already started to show some signs of improvement.
And,
oh gosh, good question. It must have been in, let's see, the early 2000s. Yeah, probably 2002, 3, 4, okay, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's around the same time I was there, too. It was starting to get its...
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And again, at that point, nowhere near as much going on as it has now.
Absolutely. And yet there were probably four times as many people coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was great. And it was weird for me to be there enjoying it as much as I did, having grown up more or less in the area. And it was, it wasn't even that it was believed to be remote, which it was, and it is not, but it was also believed to be, as in the word that was used, a troilit. It was an awful place to be, judged by people who had probably never spent any time there. It was like speaking to somebody from, I'm not picking on any place in particular, that's just the first thing that comes to mind, somebody from Bern who's like, downtown Albany, are you kidding? Oh my God, do you fear for your life?
Yeah.
What?
Center when you've Square? Never left Schoharie County, of course you're going to be terrified. There's a bus. What is that thing?
Right. It looks like the set of Friends. No, I'm not scared.
I'm in
stacks, fearing for my life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and listen, with their, you know, times have changed, and there's obviously some places that, you know, are a little less safe than others. But ultimately, like, I don't live like that. You know, it's like you keep your head on a swivel, you know where you're going, you know, you keep your belongings safe and just, you know, pay attention. But I hate that's another excuse. And people will use that as an excuse to, like, not go places and say it's not this, it's not that, it's not safe. And it's like, all right, some of those people probably weren't going to come out anyway.
Right. And unfortunately, I think there is, roughly speaking, this is, of course, not entirely true, but there's a cultural choice to be made. A lot of interesting culture is a byproduct of population density and variety. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of why we associate creative scenes with cities.
Yeah.
And with population density and variety comes the possibility of some friction.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that there isn't friction in rural areas or to say that there isn't creativity in rural areas.
Sure.
But your odds are better driving into Albany than, driving into a state park to get a slice of pizza after a good show or the show that you chose out of three to see that night. Mm-hmm. So I do think, even if it is true that there is a risk going into the big city, aren't you going to make that choice? Don't you want to participate in culture?
Exactly. And like I said, I actually have a joke on my comedy special that I've been telling for years. And it's a joke, but it isn't. It's about when I bump into people that say, we've been meaning to come to a show. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. Like, I have some time right now. Let's do this. Let's figure out why you haven't been to a show in 20 years.
Right.
And one by one, I start to knock away it's always out of town. It's like, no, I was right down there. It was always so late. No, that was like 4:00. Oh, it's always this. It's always that. And at the end of the joke, I'm like, I'll be in your yard on Sunday. And I'm like, oh, you're out of town? Okay. So there's just some people that are just never going to come out, no matter what. And I'm not going to, I'm good at sizing those people up now. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on them. But there are some people. We want to create an experience that people I don't mean to say afraid to miss, but like that people are going to be like, it's like anything else. Like, you know, when I go to the gym or when I go to an AA meeting, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. You know, I'd rather stay home. And then I go and afterwards I'm like, well, that was lovely.
I think that's a really interesting illustration. And I think what it is sort of beholden on those of us who want to communicate about the positive attributes of these experiences, keep in mind that some of these people may not have experienced it the first time. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're rejecting it based on experience.
No.
It's that they, and in fairness to them, it is easier to watch Netflix than to go to a movie theater. It is easier to stream music than to go to a live music experience. And this kind of goes back to what we were saying a moment ago, perhaps, there's no risk. But they are qualitatively different experiences. Mm-hmm. And I stream movies. I often do not feel like going to a movie theater. I listen to music on my computer at home. I do not always, like 8 o'clock seems so late to me now.
Yeah.
So I see far, far fewer shows than I once did.
Sure.
When it was a regular part of my life, both as a private citizen and as someone who was paid to write about this stuff. And then every now and then there's a show that, as you said, seems, this is unmissable.
Yeah.
We will be so mad at ourselves. This is a weird opportunity. It's Joe Jackson comes to the Egg. We will feel like idiots if we don't see Joe Jackson one time in our life. And when has he been here last? Like when I was 8
yeah.
or something? Or something even grander and more unusual, Godspeed You Black Emperor at the Basilica. What kind of moron
yeah.
would miss that? And the answer is easy. Somebody who hasn't heard of Godspeed You Black Emperor or know what the Basilica in Hudson is yeah. or what that experience is like.
Or someone who didn't hear about the show in
right.
the first place.
didn't know that it was happening.
Which is what we're trying to accomplish with this.
Right. So I think that is, yeah, that's an interesting more than two-step process, but the first two steps of the process are, I guess, inform people that things are happening mm-hmm. in an easy way and convey to them over time what it is to have those experiences.
Yeah.
And I think, again, those of us old enough to have gone through periods where this information was transmitted in a different way, we probably got turned on to that life via, well, we got turned onto it by someone who is experienced in it. And for many of us who didn't have older siblings, perhaps, it was through someone's writing.
Yeah.
And at a time when rock journalism, say, was really, really vital, it was that's the important purpose that it served. And even if it was negative, looping back, even if it was critical, even if it was mean, there was something so energetic, so passionate about it.
Yeah.
And some of these iconic writers, Lester Bangs being probably the most famous one, who was like a genius and an oaf and a drug abuser and a music lover and a music hater.
Mm-hmm.
He is so delightful to read while having at times the worst
yeah.
imaginable opinions and taste by some lights. Mm-hmm. He was a huge champion of Bob Seger and he hated Led Zeppelin. Like
that's makes no sense
awesome.
To me.
That is so great to read that. Now, when I read it, Bob Seger was well into his kind of classic rut. So I'm
sure.
like, turn the page again. You like that better than you like whatever.
Yeah.
Moby Dick, that's weird.
Yeah.
But now I appreciate it in a way that then it just seemed like, this guy is involved in something so weird and he feels so strongly about it. I want to know more about that.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
And I think that is kind of the mission. It is so easy to understand how either adults have lost, I mean, mature adults have lost the energy to remain connected to that, and how young people may just never have had the experience in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And to really kind of proselytize about, you will feel like you've been to, we wouldn't say it like this, an AA meeting. You will feel like you've been to the gym. You will feel like you've done that difficult task that always makes you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
If you go see just your friend's band, man, like some of the best bands I have ever seen have been buddies of mine.
Yeah.
And that's a fun, confusing experience too. When you look at your idiot friends and think, oh shit, you're one of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are morons. And then you go see them and they're like godlike.
Yeah.
It's a fun experience just for that kind of cognitive dissonance, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, I definitely experienced that myself. And I was saying to when I interviewed Broder, and I said, you know, I was listening to like one of his newer songs and there was a part of me that was like, I can't believe I know the person that
oh, yeah.
wrote this because it's so great. But then you also remember that Broder had, you know, the Five Alpha.
All right. Five Alpha Beatdown, the fake
and
Icelandic band.
I'm like, what on earth? And I could not miss that when they were, you know, doing stuff like that. And I feel like there's always been such amazing talent in this area and it's a great hub. And that's why I stayed here, and that's why I love here, love it here, and I want more people to see what I see and do what I do. Hopefully, that's, you know, again, and maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm optimistic, but
I think, again, that's necessary.
Yeah.
You wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
And I think that's something special about a weird city or conglomeration of a few cities. There are possibilities here that are not present elsewhere.
Yeah.
Again, either because they're too small or because they're too big. I am optimistic enough or naive enough to think there's no place that doesn't contain talent.
Yeah.
If you go through some wide spot in the road and it's got four houses, in most of those four houses, there's talent of some sort. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who's a great instrumentalist or a great composer or a great singer or a great poet or a great cook or a great whatever. Are we ever going to know about them? Possibly not. There is, of course, an enormous concentration of talent in the larger cities. People who are either fortunate enough to have been born there with talent, et cetera, or those talented people who went there for opportunity. This is something in the middle, I think, and it's revelatory when you realize what those numbers actually are.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much talent here. There has always been that, whatever that amount is, that nebulous, you know, you can't put a number on it. And it hasn't been locked in an era. It wasn't like, oh, remember when Albany was the funk capital?
Yeah.
Like, well, no. And then it was this, and then it was this, and then it was this. And it was all of these other things. It's really just a question of, I'm sure there's some scientific term for this. It's selective attention mm-hmm. may suggest that Albany does this well and not that well. It's probably not true.
Yeah. I've always found it to be indie. In whatever, and that's a broad stroke, but still.
Yeah, a broad stroke and an evolving term. It's not used
exactly.
Now. My daughter uses it, and she is not talking about Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah.
So,
she seems very cool, by the way.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with us, and I hope I've extended this invitation to a few other people. I hope if there's anything that ever strikes your fancy, you will share.
I would love to.
I would love to have you contribute at some point. Honestly, you have full rein to, if you pick something, you're like, I just feel like writing about this.
I appreciate the invitation, and I have every intention of taking you up on it.
I love that. We would love to hear more from you.
Fantastic.
So,
cool.
All right. Thank you so much meeting with me.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been John Rodat, and I am Erin Harkes, and this is The Mistress of None, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Welcome back to The Mistress of None. That was John Rodat, former Metroland staffer, reporter. It was a fun conversation. And again, I said I'm going to try and change it up a little bit so it doesn't get too redundant, but I hope y'all are as fascinated with this process as I am. I'll assume that you are until I hear otherwise. But we're gonna have a good time. I can't wait to talk to some of the people. And again, once we get a little clout and get back into the community, I'm hoping to get some interviews with some major names that are coming through. I'm very confident that will happen, and hopefully we'll get some people that you've heard of on the podcast. But thanks for tuning in and sticking with me. And again, if you're on social media, you want to go follow the Metroland now. And share it with your friends and follow Mistress of None and share it with your friends and keep tuning in. I'm going to do my best to stick to this weekly schedule. Also, check out the 518 Unsigned. My buddy Andy Scullin is running that one. That's going to be absorbed by Metroland as well so that we can bring you all the best in local music scene. And thanks for listening, guys. I hope you have a great week, and I believe this is coming out right before my Lena Go Round return, September 25th. Lena Go Round. You can go to erinharkes.com to get your tickets. It's going to be a great show with some great acts, including myself, and I may even have a new song or two. So I hope to see you there. Thanks again. Like, love, follow, share, all that good stuff. Be good to one another, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harks.